Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Den of Spies is the new book from Craig Unger, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. The events of 79 and 80 are now part of American history. Ronald Reagan is elected, and Jimmy Carter is castigated as a weak president. Iran is in a revolutionary state, pretty much the state you see today, although not as rich then as it is now. And at the same time, there are stories circulating that something untoward happened in the summer and fall of 1980 that made it possible for the Reagan inauguration to celebrate the release of the hostages on that day. Strangely, we're at the kitchen table of Craig Unger on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and Craig is reading an op-ed, I believe, in the New York Times by Gary Sick. Who is Gary Sick, Craig?
Gary Sick was on Jimmy Carter's National Security Council. He was the point man on Iran during the hostage crisis. He had a background in naval intelligence. He'd been at Columbia University for the last 30 years or so. And he is very much a man who's part who believes in empirical reality. He's a just the facts man. He takes facts and he analyzes them. And he's considered very sober-minded. For him to write this op-ed piece in the New York Times suggesting that the October surprise took place suddenly gave credibility to something that had just been whispered about.
There are other correspondents necessary. Craig is an investigative reporter and a book writer, and he has colleagues. And one of the, for those of you who plan to be investigative reporters, you have friends everywhere. You talk to each other. You move from job to job. You have proteges. You have mentors. It's a world within worlds. And we need to mention some of these names because they all contribute to this storytelling over decades. Who is Bob Perry at the time reporting on the same story?
Bob Perry was a colleague of mine. He died a few years ago. He was an AP reporter, and he won the George Polk Award for uncovering the Iran-Contra scandal and being the leading reporter on that. He also had preceded me at Newsweek, and in theory, we were rivals because we were working on the same story. But as time went on, we began to work together and share information. And that happened with several other investigative reporters I was friendly with.
Yeah, Martin Killian, Seymour Hersh, all of these names are important to understand. We're building a story that is in the shadows. We now come to Craig presenting his thinking about this story to Esquire magazine, who were Esquire was embraced the story. This is the Hearst Corporation. What is it that they wanted you to do, Craig? What was the assignment exactly?
Well, essentially, I read that op-ed piece. It's still memorable to me over 30 years later. And I really, op-ed pieces are generally opinion pieces. But as I said, Gary was an intelligence analyst, and his opinions were rooted in real facts. So I thought if I could get to the basis of that, I could create a real dramatic narrative, which is what I did for Esquire, a 10,000-word piece that would lead the way to uncovering all the key facts about this. It's also worth going back in time a little. I was someone who became an investigative reporter when the big stories of the day were Watergate, the Pentagon Papers, the My Lai massacre. And at the time, one investigative story like that could seize the national take control of the national conversation. It could lead to actual changes. And I thought we were still in that world. And I started pursuing the story along those lines, that I was going to get to the bottom of it. This was going to be, to me, what Watergate was to Woodward and Bernstein. But things didn't come out exactly that way.
Immediately, Greg turns to a source whose name has emerged from the allegation, the story, the legend, the fairy tale of October Surprise. That something untoward happened by the Republicans to keep the Iranians not in really non-transparently right up to the inauguration of holding those hostages. And then they were released. Something happened. And there's a man named Ari Ben-Menash. Who is he? Who do you believe he is at the time you start talking to him?
Well, he was one of several intelligence operatives who came out of the woodwork. They were all these super sources. And Ari was one, someone who was demonized as a nut, as a fraud and a hoaxer. I wasn't sure. This was very difficult to investigate, because to investigate it, you had to go into the world of illegal arms dealing. And these are people who are extremely disreputable. There are rogue intelligence operatives, which is essentially, that's what Ari Ben-Menashe was. He was a rogue intelligence operative from Israel who was quite angry at Israel. They had let him stay, and he had been busted for arms dealing in New York. He spent nearly a year in the Metropolitan Correctional Center where Jeffrey Epstein died. He didn't like it there. Israel had sort of cut him loose. And to talk to these people, you risked put your career at risk, because you knew you would be discredited as a conspiracy nut. But I also knew there was no other way to get into the world of arms dealing than talking to actual arms dealers. So I began to talk to Ari Ben-Menashe, first by phone in Australia, and later when he came to the United States.
He tells two whoppers that immediately will jump off the page. The first is about Bill Casey in Madrid. What does he say?
Well, he's saying that Bill Casey was there, and that Bill Casey was there meeting with Iranians, and that was the place where the parameters of the deal were sketched out. The terms of the deals were sketched out. And at the end of meeting, I mean, what is so heinous about this? There are two things. One is that the Republicans are not even in power. So Bill Casey has no authority whatsoever to sell arms to Iran. It's in addition, there is an arms embargo against Iran. And it appears that he's violating the Logan Act, which prohibits private citizens from interfering with American foreign policy. And that's bad enough, getting the weapons to Iran, sending arms to people who are holding imprisoning Americans is one thing. But in addition, in return for those arms, Casey was asking for one other favor. And he was saying, don't release the hostages. Hold them until after the elections. He did not want the Americans released immediately.
This is the story Ben-Menashe talks. The meeting takes place, according to Ben-Menashe, in late July 1980 in Madrid. Now, the other whopper he tells, which is challenging, is that George Bush, previously the head of the CIA for Mr. Nixon, and among other jobs that he served, he ran for the Senate in Texas, George H.W. Bush, the father, and was not successful. At the same time, he's now the vice presidential nominee for Ronald Reagan, having challenged him heartily in the campaign process. Ronald Reagan chooses him as vice president. And the other Ben-Menashe story is that Ronald Reagan was in Paris in October of 1980, I believe. For what purpose? Ben-Menashe says,
this was to seal the deal, the final deal. It's around October 24th, which, remember, that's like 2 weeks before the presidential election. And that's when the arms really start to flow to Iran.
Craig has this story, and he follows through with a lot of other interviews. We're going fast now because publication is competitive. The story is published in the October Esquire. which comes out, I guess, in what, early September? I can't remember how.
Yeah, yes, that's absolutely right. You got it.
Early September. These are the days before the internet, before the iPhone, before instant communication or Zoom or any of that. You do things on strange things called telephone booths. There used to be lots of them. You have home phones that don't even have answering machines, or they do. They don't even have credible voicemail. We might as well have Pony Express notes on sagebrush blowing across the plains as we communicate. But Craig is pounding the pavement. He gets a story out. He's very proud of it. And immediately afterwards, well, soon enough, Newsweek gives him a call. I believe Jonathan Alter was at Newsweek at the time and said the boss wanted to talk to you. What did they want, Craig?
They wanted to hire me to lead the investigation, and I was thrilled. I mean, it's also going back in time. I don't know if people can understand this, but a few organs in the media can dictate the national conversation. And Time and Newsweek were very, very powerful. Newsweek had its own 55-story building on Madison Avenue. It was a huge enterprise with dozens of international bureaus all over the world, foreign correspondents all over the world. And the three major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, the New York Times, Washington Post, and these Newsweeks, that was the flow of information to Americans. And suddenly I was at one of those very powerful institutions that could dictate the national conversation.
Craig Unger, Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. When we come back, Newsweek, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.